This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. Inspire change. Shape the future.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. So I've lived in the Midwest for most of my life. I've spent a lot of time driving on I-90. On either side of the interstate, you'll see grass, you'll see cornfields, outlet malls. If it wasn't for the road signs, you might not even be able to tell the difference between one Midwestern state versus the other. And the region is notoriously flat. But when it comes to abortion rights, crossing state lines is more of a roller coaster. 2 years ago this week, the Supreme Court overturned Roe versus Wade.
Minutes after the U.S. Supreme Court overturned the constitutional right to an abortion, Missouri's Republican leaders triggered one of the strictest abortion bans in the country.
Indiana lawmakers worked late into the night yesterday to pass an abortion ban.
The Iowa state legislature has passed a bill outlawing nearly all abortions in the state.
Abortion providers in Wisconsin stopped offering services for more than a year after Roe v. Wade was overturned. They resumed last year after a Dane County judge ruled a pre-Civil War law does not prohibit abortion.
Governor J.B. Pritzker today further establishing Illinois as an abortion oasis in the Midwest with a series of initiatives.
Now, things vary wildly across the Midwest, and I recently read a book that helped me wrap my head around just how disparate things are. It's called Life Altering: Abortion Stories from the Midwest. I sat down with the author, Angie Leventis Lourgos. She's a staff writer at the Chicago Tribune, and she's been reporting on this since before Roe was overturned.
I was surprised to find that a little over 3,000 patients were traveling to Illinois to terminate pregnancies every year. And that was of roughly 40,000 abortions performed back in 2015. And that just seemed like a lot. So I started exploring why so many people were crossing state lines for abortion care.
Angie tells a lot of stories in this book, and I wanted to start with one that shines a light on abortion in Illinois pre-Roe. Angie talked to a woman named Letta Daly.
I did a story about abortion restrictions, and after it was published, Letta contacted me to tell her own story about her own illegal abortion a few years before Roe v. Wade. She was 17 at the time, and she went with her mom one night in the summer of 1966 to have an abortion at an illegal clinic on the city south side. She traveled with her mom from the north side. A car they'd never seen before, a man they never met before, picked them up from an undisclosed location and drove them to a site nearby this clinic. They walked and then went inside, and there was nothing outside that was completely nondescript. Nothing would say, you know, this is a clinic or any kind of medical provider. Mm-hmm. And she went inside and met a man who was a surgeon who terminated her pregnancy. She never knew the name of the doctor, never knew if the clinic had a name of any kind, doesn't really know who arranged the abortion. She said it was arranged by the parents of her boyfriend at the time. But she believes that this changed the course of her life. It was a decision that she made very easily, and it was one she never looked back on, but she believes she would have never been able to graduate from her college. She doesn't even believe she would have been allowed to graduate with her class in high school. She kept the abortion secret almost entirely for most of her life. She rarely spoke about her legal abortion, but then she came out to the Tribune and wanted to talk about it in order to sound the alarm. When I interviewed her for the first time, it was 2019. This was when a number of abortion restrictions were popping up in states around the country. And she believed wholeheartedly that it was going to be the end of Roe eventually. I caught up with her the day that the Dobbs decision came down. And she wasn't surprised at all. She kind of predicted this, but she was really disheartened. She said, for a long time, I had a feeling that for feminism and for women's rights, that we had won the battle, but we are losing the war. I don't believe I will live to see women's equality, and that makes me very sad.
Hmm. Letta was a minor when she got her abortion?
Yes.
I want to talk about minors and parental consent in the region. What can you get into what that looks like now from state to state?
It's really different from state to state, and it's been an interesting change post-Dobbs. Illinois used to require parental notification, which meant that one specified adult had to be notified of the abortion. It's not the same as consent, but that had to be done prior to a minor having an abortion in Illinois. The state recently reversed that and now doesn't require parental notice. Minors can have abortions. Mm-hmm. At the time, you used to, if a minor wanted to have an abortion without a family member being notified, they could go before a judge and during a process called judicial bypass.
Yeah.
And in Illinois, I've been told it's a very clandestine kind of process. It's kept very secret, and the documents are all sealed. The person is usually called Jane Doe or mm-hmm. something similar. They're kept anonymous in the court documents. But I've been told that the vast majority of these cases are approved by a judge. It's not the same in other states. I've been told by women that they were informed by attorneys at their state, they probably wouldn't be able to get a bypass. Mm. Because it's just the bar is very difficult. The laws are written differently in different states. Again, in Illinois, the vast majority, from my understanding, they are approved, or they were approved at the time. Now there's no judicial bypass system since minors are able to come here and have abortions without notifying family members mm-hmm. prior. And from other states, other minors from other states can come to Illinois and have abortions without notice as well.
You did talk to someone whose story was in the book who got an abortion procedure before parental notice in Illinois was the law of the land. Can you tell me about Maureen Deitch and her husband, Paul?
Yeah, I reached out to a woman named Maureen Deitch who lives in suburban Chicago. And she told me about her abortion at the age of 14. This was in 1975, and it was before parental involvement laws were mandated in Illinois. And she described just being really terrified when she found out she was pregnant. She was very young. She didn't want to tell her parents. And she kind of thought life would go on and be okay afterward. Mm. Then she described the night before the procedure. She was talking to her unborn baby. She was rubbing her belly. She was saying she wished she could keep him or her. And after the abortion, she felt tremendous guilt, sadness. And it really never faded.
Mm-hmm.
She and her boyfriend, Paul, at the time, they kind of believed that life would go on and they would be able to sort of leave this behind. But she told me, I believe deep down it's something you'll never forget. You'll always know there was a child in your life who never lived to see the light of day. They ended up getting pregnant again when she was 15, and she believes that, sort of in hindsight, she believes she was trying to replace the first baby that had been terminated.
Mm-hmm.
But she felt this very strong conviction that she would have this child. She and her husband ended up getting married when she was still a minor. They wed at City Hall in downtown Chicago, and her father had to sign to give his consent. And they had a backyard wedding party on her 16th birthday, and she said that it's a decision. They both say it's a decision they never regretted. That sadness and that guilt didn't absolve when she had her child.
Mm-hmm.
She describes it as kind of flooding back. She told me there was no replacement. I was very sad that I had taken a life of someone who was just as precious as the child I was holding in my arms. I realized I was a mother of two. One was dead and one was alive. It made motherhood to the first child more of a reality.
Hmm. And so she, unlike Letta, kind of went the other direction and became an abortion rights opponent.
Yeah, she and Paul married. They had four children together, and they've attended a lot of retreats that were designed to provide healing for post-abortive couples who were struggling. They participated in the annual March for Life in Washington, D.C. One thing they told me that I thought was kind of beautiful, they sponsored a memorial brick that's paved into the walkway of a prayer garden at Marytown, a Catholic pilgrimage site. And the marker reads, "In memory of our aborted child." They also talk a lot to try to dissuade young folks from having sex and from having unplanned pregnancies, and specifically from abortion. Paul told me, or one thing that Paul said was, "I'd like to tell any young man or any aged man that this is not what you want to do. This child is yours as much as it is the woman's, and you should want that child because the child is a part of you and it's a gift from God, as is all life. And you don't want to be the one to take that life away."
I know this book was really emotionally impactful for me as a reader. Tell me about what it was like for you as a reporter.
One thing that was fascinating was to see the range of emotional reactions to having an abortion. Some women described it as being a very, very difficult decision, a true dilemma. There was no good answer. There would be women that I'd speak with who had severe fetal anomalies, and these were babies that they anticipated and couldn't wait to take home and love on and mother, but they made the decision that they felt was best for their family and for them and for the pregnancy. There were other folks who it was a very easy decision to terminate, and it was never one that caused them any grief or sadness or regret. But the process of trying to get an abortion or keeping the abortion secret or dealing with the stigma by others outside of their family or community was really difficult. Then there were other people who did experience like a lot of sadness, but they felt it was the right choice. And there were those who also did experience regret and grief.
Yeah. We've lived in a post-Roe world for 2 years now, almost exactly. I mean, as someone who's been thinking about this before Roe fell, how have you seen things change? How has this changed the way you think about the Midwest? Just wondering if you have reflections there.
I think the biggest change was that there was so much confusion day to day, which made it really hard for patients to know, is abortion legal in my state? Is it not legal in my state? Can I access it? When is it going to be accessible or not? There have been states that have flip-flopped several times. It was hard for me to keep track for the book's purposes and for my reporting at the Chicago Tribune, what laws had been passed, what court cases have come down, what court cases were we still waiting on? And it just causes tremendous fear and kind of chaos on the ground. I sort of anticipated that Dobbs would come down and then states would either make abortion illegal or it would continue to be illegal and maybe there would be stronger laws in terms of reproductive freedoms. The amount of change and back and forth and uncertainty was something I didn't expect. There are some states too that I just wasn't expecting. Like I wasn't expecting Florida to come down with additional restrictions. I also wasn't expecting Wisconsin to flip and change and now have abortion be accessible. So there were a lot of surprises.
Yeah.
I was also wasn't quite expecting the divide to continue and maybe become even stronger and more polarizing. It seems like the chasm between Missouri and Illinois, or Illinois and Indiana, has only widened in the 2 years since Roe fell.
Hmm.
And I didn't think that was possible because they seemed so disparate.
Yeah.
When I started doing this reporting, I mean, the difference in culture and politics and abortion laws was so vast then, but to see it become even more wide is fascinating.
Yeah. I know that later in the book, you kind of get into what feels like a bunch of little battles that are dotting the region between crisis pregnancy centers and abortion care clinics. Can you talk about how these two types of institutions differ, but still interact with each other?
Well, that was interesting because I also wasn't anticipating the level of violence.
Yeah.
There was just a tremendous amount of violence against both pregnancy centers, anti-abortion pregnancy centers, and abortion clinics after the fall of Roe, in terms of both threats and fires. And we've seen a lot of that in Illinois in terms of, you know, we had two clinics that were targets of violence. And these two groups couldn't be further apart, but the fact that they were both targeted in such a way has been kind of scary.
Yeah.
There's a lot of debate about what is appropriate and what are laws that can restrict anti-abortion pregnancy centers and abortion opponents in terms of their work outside of these clinics, these abortion clinics, and what are their free speech rights? And how do we allow people to have the right to free speech and the right to their religious opposition to abortion, but also keep people safe and allow people to access the health care that they desire and that they think is best for them and their families?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been another struggle in the post-Dobbs world that I don't think is going to abate anytime soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, also, what is going to happen soon is that we have an election year. I mean, I think what you're talking about as far as these two very different kind of opposing institutions both being attacked just speaks to how polarizing this issue is, and how passionate people feel in either direction, but also how passionate they feel even if they're in the gray area. So yeah, here we are, 2024. This is on people's minds as they're getting ready to vote, especially with this being just, you know, it's been 2 years, but it just still feels so recent. What are you watching in this political moment, both locally and or either locally or nationally?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens in November. Obviously, you have two presidential candidates that are both on very opposing sides.
Yeah.
You have Trump, who's claimed credit, rightfully so, probably, for the demise of Roe.
Mm-hmm.
And you have Biden, who's pledged to ensure access across the country. And I think, depending on who wins, that could have dramatic changes. I don't know if that could lead to states flipping. I don't know if that could have a tremendous impact on like nationwide policies or laws that might impact abortion across the country. But it could have a big change in terms of things like medication abortion and the FDA. Who gets appointed to the judicial branch in the future that could have long-term consequences for abortion care. They could impact things like how the federal government can access and employees can access abortion. So there's little ways and there's big ways that the election can have an impact.
Angie Leventis-Lourgos is a staff writer at the Chicago Tribune and the author of Life Altering: Abortion Stories from the Midwest. Angie, thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Angie's book, Life Altering, is out now. And that's it for today. Justin Bull, Sarah Stark, and I produce The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve is our editor and executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you love the show, rate us, review us. It helps more people find the show. If you rate us and write us a review on Apple Podcasts, we'll give you a personal shout out on the show. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you on Friday.